we're doing exactly what we should be doing to try to promote moderate Syrian leadership.
If they want to hit ISIS, that's okay with me. I'm not going to be saying we have to do it all. You know, we're like the policemen of the world.
What we've seen on the part of the Syrian regime has been an unacceptable degree of brutality.
Assad, bad guy, killed hundreds of thousands of people, but you wonder what's going to happen with the other people that we don't even know who they are. We give billions of dollars in weapons and then they turn them against us.
What we now have is evidence that chemical weapons have been used inside of Syria, but we don't know how they were used, when they were used, who used them.
It was an atrocious attack. It was horrible. You don't see things like that, as bad as the news is around the world, you just don't see those images.
A red line for us is we start seeing a whole bunch of chemical weapons moving around or being utilized.
We are very concerned when a thing like that can happen. This is about humanity. We're talking about humanity.
The red line of President Obama crossed in Syria long ago, and the current commander-in-chief, President Donald Trump, vowing to respond to another attack with chemical weapons by the Assad government in Syria. This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. The president says nice and new and smart missiles are headed to Syria. He says today on Twitter an attack could come soon or not soon at all. And he also says the world hasn't given the United States sufficient thanks for degrading ISIS in Syria. But the president's aides say all options are on the table. The United States is already on the ground in Syria. So what would an effective military response look like here? Should the United States punish Bashar al-Assad and send the world a message that chemical weapons are beyond the pale? Or should the United States take an opportunity for an intervention with a more strategic goal, weakening Assad, trying to alter the course of the Syrian civil war? Maryam Jalabi is the special representative of the Syrian Opposition Coalition to the United Nations. Maryam, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also, Stephen Simon is here, Senior Director for Middle East and North Africa on the National Security Council from 2011 to 2012, currently a professor at Amherst College. Stephen Simon, thank you.
It's my pleasure.
Stephen Simon, let me start with you. How extensive is U.S. involvement in Syria now? No boots on the ground, so they say. That's the catchphrase. But describe just how involved the United States really is.
Well, there are boots on the ground. There are at least 2,000 U.S. soldiers on the ground in Syria, and the administration's request for 2019, the defense budget request, has budgeted about $15 billion to support U.S. military operations in Syria, including the establishment of, I think, at least two bases in Syria. So it would be wrong to say that the United States is not there with boots on the ground.
Now, can you describe the activities of American forces there, overt versus covert, and the mission against ISIS versus what the United States might have been doing to undermine Assad?
Yeah, I can't speak to the covert program for legal reasons, but the overt military program is there, according to the Trump administration, for three or four reasons. The one is to support the Kurds. Another is to facilitate humanitarian support operations in Syria. A third is to weaken the regime somehow, although that's not exactly clear. And lastly, it's intended to block Iranian access to Syria, which is a main preoccupation, I would say, of the administration's.
Maryam Jalabi, let me turn to you. You are a special representative of the Syrian Opposition Coalition to the United Nations, a Syrian living in the United States. America has turned its attention onto Syria yet again after the alleged chemical attack of a few days ago. You have been advocating for an American military response here. Is that right? Why?
I'm advocating for a limited military action in Syria to ground the air force of the Assad regime that has been the biggest tool or the key tool that the regime has been using to kill civilians on the ground and to create havoc and destroy the country. So, yes, we're advocating for something that is similar to what was used in Bosnia and Kosovo, where it will actually limit the capability of this regime in killing its people and civilians on the ground and using chemical weapons so that they can come to the negotiating table to create a political solution for Syria. And let me remind you that this is not the first time the regime is using chemical weapons. It has used this before. If you remember last year in April 2017, it used it in Khan Shihoun when and the administration, the U.S. administration at that time, also used strikes on the regime to stop the use. But it was a one-time off. What we're calling for is that this should be, any strikes that are being used should be part of a comprehensive plan, a part of a diplomatic strategy to make this regime come to the negotiating table so we can have a transition.
So you're not talking about a pinprick strike or a cosmetic sort of reaction to chemical weapons. You're talking about potentially a sustained campaign against Syrian assets that would weaken Assad's air forces.
There has to be consequences for use of chemical weapons, but to not limited to that, because chemical weapons are not exactly the only tool or the only weapon that the regime uses. It's actually its main key strategy in using weapons is the indiscriminate aerial bombardment. So unless this regime is faced with the same language that it understands, which is force, to stop it from keeping to fly and kill people using bombardment, like from the air bases that they have, with the support of its allies, including Russia, there will be no solution in sight for Syrians. This will continue, and it will, with impunity, and Assad will not stop. So unless he faces consequences, there is no way that this could be stopped, the atrocities that are happening in Syria could be stopped.
Stephen, can the scenario that Mariam is describing here actually work in Syria? Many of the analysts, I don't know where you come down on this, basically say the war is winding down, Assad has won, that United States intervention here isn't going to convince Assad that he's not going to hold on to the country. Why should he negotiate?
Well, the war was winding down, but it could wind back up. But I don't think that there's very much of a chance that Assad would, from his perspective, surrender by, you know, undertaking serious power sharing negotiations with the opposition. The fact is that Syria has powerful allies that are committed to the survival of the regime. And there has been, at least up until now, a profound asymmetry of interest between the United States and the countries that are supporting the Syrian regime, which is to say only that, you know, for Syria's friends, the survival of the regime is a lot more important than the destruction of the regime has been to the United States. And when you have that kind of asymmetry, that sort of inequality of interest, the country that has the lesser interest is going to be at a disadvantage because it will always be outbid by the countries that have the greater interest. And the Russians and the Iranians have been making it quite clear, especially over the past couple of days, that they are sticking with their man.
So, Stephen, does that mean that Mariam's program of choice to force Assad back to the negotiating table through sustained and targeted degradation of his military is something that's realistic? Or what would be the realistic expectation of an American military response to the use of chemical weapons?
Well, I think in theory, Ms. Jalabi's approach is great, and it would be great if it could work. But I think as a practical matter, it's unlikely to work. You know, what the best way forward would be at this point is really unclear. I suppose, you know, most governments have taken the view that the best thing is for the conflict, you know, simply to die down. And with it, we would see a reduction in the overall levels of violence, a very unsatisfying outcome because, you know, the world is largely repulsed by the Assad regime. But there was just insufficient interest in taking ownership of Syria, which is what intervention would ultimately have entailed for the intervening power.
Well, Mariam, I know that none of that is a surprise to you. When you hear that assessment of America's investment in Syria, and even hear President Trump's statements of the last few days that the United States was on the way out there, what do you think about the future, not only of your country, but about the United States' commitment to do something to keep that country from returning to violence?
As just Stephen mentioned, the U.S. is in Syria, and the U.S. has used its power to get rid of ISIS. And what we keep forgetting when we're talking about Syria is that with the instability that the Assad regime is creating, it's not devastating only just for the Syrian people. It's also devastating for the world. Its ramifications are beyond Syria. We see it, you know, as far as the Brexit, even in Britain. It is a breeding ground for extremist groups with the kind of situation that we have now in Syria. So unless it is tackled, unless the Assad regime is tackled in a way that is bringing the stability back to the country, and that cannot happen as a Syrian who knows the history of Syria and who's lived this, the atrocities, and having personally suffered and being forced from the government, from the country itself, as many of my colleagues who are calling for a transitional governing body in Syria, we know for sure that keeping Assad in power, he's going to continue with impunity to do the damages that he has done. So as far as we Syrian people are concerned, we feel that this is not just devastating for us, it's also devastating for the global security. So we think that the Syrian regime needs to be addressed through a language that it understands, which is force, by the international community. And we just can't stop as an international community. I just don't see how we can stop and watch this from the sidelines.
Mariam, before we let you go, we talk so much about Bashar al-Assad with good reason. We talk about the United States and Russia with good reason. Let's take a step back, if you would, and look at some of the players behind the scenes. This response that you're talking about to chemical weapons, how important to send a message to Iran about its use of proxies in Syria? And on the other hand, and on the other side, of course, Saudi Arabia, so many analysts have pointed out how your country has turned into yet another violent playground in the ongoing struggle, confrontation between Iran and Saudi Arabia.
Yes, but for the Syrian people, for us, it doesn't matter who's playing on the ground. When the end is that civilians are getting killed, the country is being destroyed, and we need to see some kind of an international action that holds everyone at their responsibilities. And I need to say also here, Ad, there are so many people on the ground in Syria, the civil society groups, the women groups, the medical aid, the local councils, who are keeping the society together, who are working to preserve the structure of the civilian life and families. And this needs to be supported somehow by the international community so that the politics, the regional politics, are not going to be destroying what is left of Syria and trying to rebuild it.
Mariam Jalabi, Special Representative of the Syrian Opposition Coalition to the United Nations, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And Stephen Simon, thanks to you, professor at Amherst College, former National Security Council.
Thanks.